You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.
Hello, welcome to the Daily Nationalist. This, of course, is Matthew Raphael Johnson. Today's date, although this is actually being recorded on the 5th of October, I'm away this week, so this is the week of October 9th. So if there's anything I talk about today that might be out of date, that's why. And I've entitled today's talk, Mr. Zelensky Goes to Washington. By the time this gets aired, it'll be a week or two since Vladimir Zelensky went to, not just Washington, but North America. D.C., New York, and even in Canada. And Failure, which is really his middle name at this point, Failure has reached a point where even the corrupt and ignorant media is not covering much for him anymore. Things didn't go so well. If you remember the last time he came to North America, he was treated as a deity. That's no longer the case. Things that I've been saying from day one are now slowly but surely leaking into the popular press, with everyone else, of course, taking credit for it. Zelensky showed up in Washington in late September, the 21st, actually, and he didn't quite get the reaction that he's used to, which only embittered what's already a highly unstable man. Zelensky is not Ukrainian. He's Jewish. He has no military or political understanding or experience. He's the perfect person to install in power, as the U.S. did, to do his bidding. And he is getting more unstable as time goes on. Wallets have been closed on him. The article by Benoit Kumpmark, which came out on the 1st of October of this year, talks about the desperation that was etched on Zelensky's face, and of course that kind of blank ignorance in the eyes of those to whom he spoke. Of course, his first, I guess it was December last year when he went to North America, and he was given a blank check, this so-called steadfast commitment to supporting Ukraine. None of this kind of aid or this so-called bipartisan support ever existed during the Cold War, and aid to anti-communists throughout the Third World was condemned over and over again by the left, which reached its apogee in the Contra issue in the mid to late 80s. And you still have your idiots, the Mitt Romneys, who calls him a national and global hero. But how much he's going to be able to do for him is a separate issue. People like Nancy Pelosi, who's repugnant and laughably ignorant under the best of conditions, understanding where the power here lay, of course, made reference to two things of interest to Jews and Israelis, and that is, of course, Pearl Harbor and 9/11. And the fact that Pelosi, someone told her that this was an anniversary, this was, of course, some time ago. She said, "It's particularly poignant for me to be present when another historic leader addresses Congress in time of war, and democracy itself is on the line." And she wasn't the only person to mention the alleged connection with Winston Churchill. Ultimately, they're all on the same side and for the same reason. Now, that was back in December. Things have changed. I mean, you still had comments like that. You still had this level of stupidity and enforced worship, but it was muted. The support for this war, and of course, no one's really getting the proper information in terms of normies. Normies have no idea what's going on there. The media has no interest in knowing what's going on there. And politicians are terrified of stepping on the wrong side of this. Now, one of the things that he said in his recent visit, and this is something that Kampmark kind of makes fun of, as he should, thinking, well, how do I appeal to Americans? Zelensky is thinking, well, let's talk about their economic system. Using, you know, corporate language, he had the temerity to say, your money for me is not charity. It's an investment in global security and democracy, and that we will handle this money in the most responsible way possible. Of course, not only is that not true, but he's aware that it's not true. I know you will know this, but keep in mind that Ukraine is a one-party state. All opposition has been banned. Their assets have been seized. Media, education is tightly controlled by the state as well as Western investors. And opposition, anyone supporting the opposition is thrown in prison or otherwise silenced. Zelensky always refers to the Zionist model that he's going to turn Ukraine into another Israel. As if, you know, this isn't Jewish enough. And of course, that includes the creation of a security state. None of this, by the way, is inconsistent with democracy. That's what liberal democracy is. But even CNN, again, corrupt under the best of conditions, CNN admits, in the person of Stephen Collinson, whoever the hell he admits that the attitude in Washington has shifted since the last visit in 2022. You can't just drop references to Franklin Roosevelt or Churchill, talk about 9/11. That's all he had to do. I mean, that's the level of discussion the media creates. Interestingly, and finally, these Republicans, I mean, we have a one-party state in the U.S. It's not very different from what you have in Kiev. But Republicans may have received the memo that the security state wouldn't support their agenda. You'll remember the former chief of staff, General Milley, condemning Trump in an indirect way, talking about the entire politicization of the long-since-purged American brass. Republicans are getting a conception of this, but a lot of their base still thinks that the military is this glorious institution, conservative and traditional. I mean, they live in a fog. But apparently, CNN's poll, which I don't ever believe, still shows that about 55% of Americans are against further funding for Ukraine. Now, the number is probably much higher, although I have no idea what the people polled are basing their opinion on. Democrats are aware, or that wing of the Uniparty, that this is ideological. This is a destroying nationalism. This is destroying the resurgence of orthodoxy in the family in Russia. That's what this is about for them. This is about homosexuality. And certainly against the things that the foreign minister says all the time about what American politics is. But as it stands, as of a couple weeks ago, 71% of Republicans are opposed to further funding, but 62% of Democrats want the opposite, or at least keeping the funding levels the way they are. Despite the fact that the U.S. has been bankrupt for decades, despite the fact that, as I've spoken of in the past, I think I mentioned last week, the coming derivatives tsunami, downward pressure on the dollar, the fanatical, almost obsessive hatred of all things Russian, of course, never occurred during the Cold War, not that Russia was relevant to that. We'll talk about why that's important here in a minute. But this level of this plain-out racism, and I rarely use that term, against all things Russian, is certainly has been part of the Jewish mind for a very long time. But it has not really come into the mainstream until very recently. Now, you have people like Mitch McConnell, who may or may not still be alive. Typical of that era, of the Republican Party, he really probably can't make a distinction between Russia and the Soviet Union. And he thinks that this bloody strategy is something good for the U.S., that is to say, funding Ukraine. Anything that harms Russian interest is a good thing, no matter what it costs everybody else. He says that helping Ukraine retake its territory means weakening one of America's biggest strategic adversaries without firing a shot. I think he means without Americans having to fire a shot, although that's just indirect. I don't know how coherent he is or he was when he said this. But you have others. You have people like Rand Paul. Now, I don't follow a lot of this domestic, you know, Congress, House, Senate, party nonsense. I don't think it's all that important. So I don't really refer to these people very often. I don't think they have the power that the regime wants you to think they have. Now, no one is going to make pro-Russian statements, so they're going to have to couch their opposition to further funding in a different sort of a language. Now, as I speak here, Speaker of the House, thank God, has been dethroned. The media is having a fit. And the shutdown issue has not been resolved. Rand Paul says that he will oppose any effort to hold the federal government hostage for Ukraine funding. I will not consent to expedited passage of any spending measure that provides any more U.S. aid to Ukraine. Now, he also wrote in the American Conservative, which I don't really read, and he says, with no end in sight, it looks increasingly likely that Ukraine will be yet another endless quagmire funded by the American taxpayer. As if this had ever been an issue. Did he just discover this? Ukraine has been artificially propped up in a war that it lost within the first few weeks when its air force was wiped out on the ground. He does say, though, that those people who control Biden, who mentally is not that far away from Mitch McConnell, quote, failed to articulate a clear strategy or objective in this war, and Ukraine's long-awaited counteroffensives have failed to make any meaningful gains in the East. So it's he couches, at least back then, he couches his opposition, number one, concerning the shutdown, the threat of the shutdown of the federal state, which, you know, is always a good thing. And number two, that Ukraine is not doing well, which really, I mean, it's taken all this time to finally sink in, and certainly not to everybody, that Ukraine doesn't have the capacity for this kind of a war. Without American support, it would have been over long ago. Failing to articulate a strategy. Now, the objective is to do as much damage to Russia as possible. So there is an objective, it's just an ignorant one. But the fact that it's been a quagmire from day one, Ukraine has been bankrupt third world for decades now. Ukraine would be in the same economic position whether or not this war ever happened. The army that was set to invade New Russia, the Donbass back in January and February of 22, was completely artificial. Much of it was foreign, and it was a diversion of resources away from a desperate country. Then, of course, he couches it, as do most congressional opponents of this funding. He couches it in a few other ways. The third way is that it may involve a direct confrontation between the U.S. and the Russian military. And then, number four, and these aren't necessarily false, they're just not really the core of the issue, that there are no oversight mechanisms regarding where this money goes. I've been saying for 20 years, I've been talking about the intense, almost Albanian levels of corruption that you find in Kyiv. There's no non-corrupt part of the country that you can appeal to then help heal the rest of it. There's nowhere to go. I tell people make a living here. There's not a lot of difference between the Jewish oligarchs who control the economy and this hapless state. The only thing the Kyiv state is good for is shutting down opponents of the American agenda there. And this is all, by the way, fully consistent with democracy. Rand Paul says that, unfortunately, corruption runs deep in Ukraine. The understatement of the year. And there's plenty of evidence that it has run rampant since Russia's invasion. But then he does say something that I didn't expect. He says Zelensky has banned political parties, invaded churches, arrested priests. So no, it isn't democracy, it's a corrupt regime. So let's keep an eye on Rand Paul. God knows, and God forbid, something bad may happen to him for stating the obvious here. Now, what's developing, and I've noticed it over the last few weeks, it isn't so much that there's an opposition to the American Imperium, the Mick Empire, the empire of postmodern liberalism. It's who should be targeted. So you have people like Josh Hawley from Missouri. It isn't so much that, you know, he even couches his opposition or semi-opposition, saying that Russia isn't the threat that China is, and hence the American Empire should be focused on China and Taiwan. And as far as Europe is concerned, he says that the only thing they should be reassured of is that, you know, their security is in the nuclear hands of the United States, the so-called nuclear umbrella. Now, on the 30th of September, as most of you know, there's the temporary funding bill that expires on the 17th of November. You had only 91 people in opposition, but it didn't include any military or any kind of aid to Kyiv. I've never come across an obsession to such an extent, not even concerning Israel, where they don't really care what happens so long as money gets to Kyiv. Now, a part of me wants to say that this has to do with New Khazaria, because the entire New Khazarian project has been totally derailed. That Zionism should really go where it belongs, and that's to the areas occupied by the medieval Khazar Empire, which certainly surround the Black Sea. That's, I guess, part of it. But Russia is such a threat, or the Russo-Chinese alliance is such a threat to liberalism, which is the fundamental purpose of the regime, supporting it and creating it and forcing it internationally and creating the Great Reset as a result and trying to get their hands on the assets of that, especially in Russia, Belarus, and even Central Asia, that they will spare nothing, including American lives, for the sake of... because most of these people, if you ask them why the obsession is so intense to do damage to Russia, they're not going to have a coherent response. They'll say something like they used to say about Iraq, about an invasion, or whatever. But it doesn't go much further than that. Now, back in August, people who are running the Biden administration, quote-unquote, requested a $24 billion package. This is as America is utterly bankrupt. But the total that was accepted was just over $6 billion. And of that, only about $1.5 billion is specifically marked for the so-called Ukrainian Security Assistance Initiative, which is simply a direct subsidy to the arms manufacturers, although I think people underestimate how long and how difficult it is to keep a functional army in advanced weapons. And in Ukraine, I don't think it matters anyway. I think that the war against Russia is to a great extent a form of neurotic projection. In that in fighting Russia, they're fighting the worst in themselves, because every single thing they accuse Russia of is being done far worse and far more intensely in Washington and Ukraine. Calling for the collapse of the economy is going to collapse, Russians hate Putin, all this stuff. None of it is true, but it certainly applies to them. And I don't think that's a coincidence. You have an ignoramus in Maryland, Steny Hoyer, whatever that is. And here's what this fool said. He said, "I am deeply disappointed that this continuing resolution," that is to say the funding bill, "did not include further aid for our ally, Ukraine. In September, the House held 7 votes to approve that vital funding to Ukraine. Each time, more than 300 House members voted in favor. This ought to be a nonpartisan issue and ought to have been addressed in the continuing resolution today." My Lord. Now, on the 2nd of October, Kirsten Reese, who I've cited many times before, who is definitely worth talking about, who does enjoy mocking the failures of Zelensky on and off the battlefield, but he's also talking about the continuing resolution, or this temporary funding bill that will expire again on the 17th. Now, by the time you're hearing this, this may not be relevant, but it is at the moment. Now, what Breitbart seems to suggest is that this is a, quote, huge win for Republicans. Again, these kind of phrases don't impress me. Now, it's really because Republicans want to stop this irresponsible overspending by the U.S. government, as if spending is this fungible category. And in the end, you know, the stopgap measure was passed. Mike Lee and Rand Paul, Mike Lee of Utah, used all kinds of delaying tactics on that vote. But the former House Speaker, Kevin McCarthy, oh God, is a win for conservatives. They will allow for quick consideration of the bill in the Senate. Not that that matters now. McCarthy is gone. But Reese suggests that they should celebrate. The battle for Ukrainian funding will pick back up soon, of course, if the bill passes, as expected. Again, this is on the 2nd of October. But the victory is that $6 billion that I mentioned already has been cut out, at least until the 17th of November. But if they're forced to choose, and this is of some significance, Democrats, despite their obsessive fixation on their own neurosis, would rather at least go in public and talk about domestic spending versus spending in a country that they of which they know absolutely nothing. It's at least a little bit nice to see Republican resistance to funding Kiev. I truly think that in some very incomplete way, by some osmosis, Republicans are learning that the empire doesn't support their interests. And there's a handful, not the McConnells of the world, but there's some of these younger guys that might be the case. Now, the regime knew that if the Democrats oppose this continuing resolution, Republicans would then claim that they cared far more about financing Ukraine than anything domestic, or even funding the American government at all. But they never said anything like that a year ago, because that's exactly what they did a year ago. Now, that's just pure campaign rhetoric. Now, the Ukrainians want to make believe that this so-called already announced aid will continue. But unless this aid comes with a functional economy and trained men and a supportive population, it's meaningless. And the very fact that it's meaningless is why it is continuously diverted, finds its way on the black market. The people who receive this on the ground there are a part of the same regime that people like Rudy Giuliani, finally, after I've been talking about it for years, finally understood and exposed. And I like, and I mentioned this in my very long paper on the Ukraine war that I put out a couple months ago, because Giuliani is an expert on organized crime. That was his big, as a prosecutor in New York City and elsewhere, that was his big target. And so if there's someone who understands how Kiev works, it would be him. And that's why his exposure actually wasn't half bad. Now, even if the way this develops, if the money's going to go to Ukraine anyway, the regime will figure a way to get it there, knowing full well they're going to be covered by the media. So they'll figure out some way. They'll send drug money there, you know, whatever it takes. But then Republicans may demand something in return. So they can say something like, you got a few billion dollars that's going to be diverted in Ukraine, but we want something else. Now, the unfortunate thing about that is that it might be something like Medicare or Social Security that actually should be funded. But the regime has no problem, and they've said it 100 times, axing really necessary spending versus supporting what they think democracy is in Kiev. But it doesn't matter, because ultimately that Republican victory, removing people like McCarthy, is a personal defeat for Zelensky. Back in December, he had this standing ovation, heroes welcome. That isn't there. When Zelensky showed up a few weeks ago, what did he have? He had a miserably failed counteroffensive, massively high casualties. And despite the media hype, there's people who are noticing that this isn't working. In fact, he wasn't even allowed to speak to the entire body. He got a fairly cool reception. This is, well, Reese goes so far as to say this is a kiss of death for both Kiev and Zelensky. The large projects, the massive amounts of funding, have been cut off, at least for now. Again, they'll figure a way to get something there. They'll use private sources. They go to BlackRock. This doesn't necessarily have to be a political thing. But very much like foreign support for the Confederate cause in the Civil War, they have to show something. One of the reasons that both the British and the French didn't support the Confederacy was that they couldn't show progress. I think it's one of the reasons that Lee invaded the North. They needed to show foreign sources of funding that they're doing something, that they need a huge victory. And of course, in Ukraine, that's not going to happen. The EU, which is now on the border of third world status, especially from immigration, there's not many euros to send. Now, these guys are talking about Ukraine being entirely dependent on subsidies from the West. That's nothing new. That would have been the case whether there was a war or not. But any reduction in aid is going to have a devastating consequence for the Ukrainian war effort, such as it is. And it hurts me to say this, but they're simply running out of men. This is utterly genocidal. You had Biden or whoever controls him, that zombie, talking about peace initiatives will not occur. It's essentially this Judaic idea of setting two hated people against each other. Remember how the Jews considered the Cossacks? This is why Israel has been cool about supporting one side or the other, because really it's a victory either way. Now that the idiot is gone, McCarthy, I don't know, as I'm speaking now, how there can be agreement on a new one in any short period of time. So that's going to imperil any funding after the stopgap bill expires. And whether or not the regime can force through a budget for the coming fiscal year anytime soon is a whole separate issue. And again, this was enacted September 30th. It's also humiliation for that zombie in the White House, who was installed in the White House. You know, Biden was ordered to make Kiev a priority. Now he can't do that. It's a shame the government wasn't shut down, but maybe that may still happen. But forcing that stopgap measure through without this kind of obsessive Ukrainian funding is, to some extent, it's a victory. You have politicians on both sides in Germany receiving enormous support from voters and their criticism of Germany's policy towards Ukraine and the sanctions regime that's destroying their country. This visit was an absolute disaster. Now, some of you know, too, that when he was here, he visited the United Nations, and this is where his mental state was exposed. He was extremely angry. He has this typical Jewish concept of an entitlement, that he has a right to simply every penny that the West has, because, of course, democracy is at stake. But how long? I mean, I said this 15 years ago. How long is the IMF going to continue to send money to a country they know they're never going to see this money back? What exactly are they doing with it? The first things that Zelensky said was he demanded that Russia be thrown off the Security Council. Zelensky shows up at the UN in the same way he showed up in Washington, with very little. The rise of BRICS, the SCO, the so-called multipolar, the new currencies. People who've been reading me for a long time know that none of this is new, but it's a pleasure to see it spoken about, really, in the mainstream for the first time. It's not done very well, but it's becoming a mainstream idea. But usually things entering the mainstream get mangled. It is introducing even more cognitive dissonance as far as the regime is concerned. Netanyahu tried to steal the show by talking about the need for war against Iran, by the U.S., of course. Zelensky hoped that his visit could just be this violent, racial, anti-Russian meeting. I mean, you know, he got that from the Western media, of course. Yeah, there was some complaining about Moscow's so-called attack on Ukraine from the typical places. The shifts, you could even see it at the UN, and there are some doctored pictures trying to make his audience look larger. There's a few sources for that now. The unwinnable money pit. Of course, we've been saying this since February of 22, but they're just figuring this out, and that was the slogan that was bandied about quite a bit. He is unhinged. Zelensky was almost screaming at the UN for failing to prevent conflict, demanding Moscow be stripped of its veto in the Security Council. He was in the shrill voice, exhausted, defeated man. He says it's impossible to stop the war because all actions are vetoed by the aggressor. But it didn't help his cause. This isn't about UN reform. This is about the regime finally being tired of this cognitive dissonance as it concerns Ukraine. He says the Ukrainian refugees in Europe, and this is a weird statement. Oh, yes, they're well-behaved, he said, and they're grateful. But then he said, boy, it wouldn't be a good story for Europe if a Ukrainian defeat were to drive the people into a corner. Now, Ukrainians aren't exactly known for this. This would be a distraction from the third worlders who are violent. That's why they're there. But was this a threat? That somehow he was going to be able to command these people to violence? There's a reason that they left the country. That's how unhinged he is. He thinks that he can cause this. There's going to be millions of Ukrainian refugees without homes and jobs. And he could do something with that if he's not giving all the support that he believes is his due. Well, we all know it's highly unlikely, but it shows you how unhinged this man is. Now, his address to the General Assembly was a little bit better, but he didn't give anything new. He believes that this war, you know, you thought the Israelis were bad. He is far worse. He didn't just call Russia evil. He called Russians evil and terrorists, and that there's a genocide there. Unfortunately, someone may not have told him that Eastern Ukraine is Russian, wanting very little to do with the Banana Republic in Kiev. He put a wreath at the stupid 9/11 Pentagon Memorial at Arlington, Virginia. But then there's talk about giving him what they call significant air defense capabilities, not asking whether anyone can operate them or they could be integrated into a defense department. But neither Biden nor Zelensky have any experience in this area. Anyway, I've gone over my time. I think I've made my point here. Thank you, everyone. I'll talk to you next week. Bye-bye.
You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.